Yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Today I'm wise, so I am changing myself. At the time when the 13th century Persian poet Rumi wrote those words, the world and human consciousness was rapidly changing. When Rumi was 8, King John signed the Magna Carta. When he was 21, Fibonacci printed the Liber Abaci, and our algorithmic age took breath. When he was 34, Koreans began to use metal type. Europeans began to use rockets. When Rumi was 61, eyeglasses were invented. When he was 62, the astronomical compass. Yet among his rapidly transforming world, Rumi already knew a key tenet of effective change management. True, lasting change always begins with the self. Maybe there's never been a time in our history when change didn't feel rapid and unstoppable. It certainly is true for us today. And in healthcare alone, changes over the past decade have impacted providers, politicians, and patients in equally bewitching and beleaguering ways, all of us wondering what comes next. Welcome to Steps to Value, a podcast that explores the intersection of people, processes, and technology in healthcare as the industry moves toward a value-focused model. I'm your host, Rod Piechowski, and in today's episode, we're going to discuss how technological, regulatory, and operational changes over the past 10 years have affected the healthcare industry with Dr. Ferdinand Velasco, HIMSS North America Board Member and Chief Health Information Officer at the Davies Award-winning Texas Health Resources. We'll also hear from Dr. Velasco on how his annual conference experience has changed over the 15 years he's attended the event. All that and more coming up. HIMSS17 is the meeting place for all things health IT. Experience over 300 education programs, more than 1,200 vendors, hundreds of special programs, and limitless networking opportunities. Collaborate with HIMSS and thousands of colleagues worldwide as you work to positively transform health and lives through IT. Register today at HIMSSconference.org. I'm here with Ferdinand Velasco, MD, Chief Health Information Officer at the Davies Award-winning Texas Health Resources. Dr. Velasco is also a member of the HIMSS North American Board of Directors. Ferdy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rod.
Well, it's great to have you, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. We've got a couple of questions for you. Well, let's start with this. As we make the move from a disease-focused care model to one of wellness, and we have more data coming in, are we currently data-rich or data-poor?
Well, I think we're both. But first, let me challenge the premise of your question. I think that we're still really at the very early stages of that transition from disease-focused care to a wellness-based care model, such that largely we are still very much disease-focused. I think that the transition has been one from being reactive and dealing with the consequences of disease to trying to avoid the long-term sequelae of disease. So yes, prevention has become much more of a focus, but it's still disease-focused as opposed to truly focused on well-being. So I think there is a lot more data now available. I think the outcome of the EHR incentive program has been to generate considerable adoption of electronic health records and health information technology, and that's capturing a lot of clinical data, a lot of patient-generated data. But where I think we can say that we're still data poor is in our ability to integrate that data in a meaningful way, to use the data for analytics in a sophisticated way. I think we're still very much dependent on individual clinicians looking at data trends for an individual patient rather than across patient populations, and often just kind of looking at snapshots of data rather than looking at data over longer periods of time. So it's both. I think we have a lot of wealth of data, but our ability to integrate that data meaningfully is still suboptimal.
Well, speaking of meaningful use and macro and all that, that continues to drive a lot of workflow changes. So in your observations, are clinicians experiencing more change fatigue or alert fatigue? Is it kind of all related? You know, our world is changing. How's that affecting not only the clinicians, but maybe even the patient as well? Is it noticeable?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I do think it is becoming palpable. The burden of regulatory change is beginning to weigh itself on our caregivers, on the care delivery model. And just keeping up with all of the changes has been, you know, very difficult for our physicians. And I'm sure that that is impacting their ability to deliver good patient care. So that is, I think, one of the unintended consequences of all of this change, is that it's difficult for the physicians to keep up. And even when they try to, I think it's difficult for them to make sense of it all.
I mean, speaking strictly for me, not as somebody who knows everything about every person on the planet, I know to some degree I embrace change and I welcome it. And to another extent, I seek some kind of standard or process that I can depend on. And those processes just seem to be changing so much, and we need to adapt. That takes a lot of attention away from being a physician, for example. How can I keep up with everything that I need to know being a clinician when my workflow and everything around me is constantly changing? Is that part of it, do you think?
That's fair. And it seems like just when we're beginning to get a sense of the direction that policy is going, it changes 180 degrees with the next cycle of rulemaking. You know, just when we thought that we were getting finally some clear direction on the trajectory of the movement toward, you know, the importance of this clinical decision support, those elements are now out of meaningful use. I think, you know, reasonably so, because they're topped out. But, you know, it seems like the stress, the emphasis on certain things changes from one year to the next, and it's difficult for our clinicians to keep up with it all. And I think what's exacerbating that is that the rulemaking process itself is extremely complicated. Not only are the rules very long and lengthy, and the process of trying to decipher it all difficult unless you're an expert in reading what CMS and others put out, but increasingly the relevant rulemaking is now spread out across multiple proposed and then final rules. So it's very difficult to keep up.
Yeah, it's always fun when you're reading a 2,400-page document that constantly refers to another 1,900-page document. Well, so we're talking a little bit here about change and change management, and I'm certain that you've been involved in some of those. Could you give us a couple of examples, maybe from your experiences, where a change management project worked and maybe something that didn't work so well, and what are some lessons others could take from that?
Sure. So I would have to say that, you know, obviously implementing and getting clinicians to adopt electronic health record technology in a meaningful way that really improves patient care has been what's consumed me and many others in the industry over the past, you know, decade plus. And as a result of that experience, I've learned a lot about many aspects of change management. Certainly the most important part is the cultural piece. You know, how do we work with our physicians, nurses, and other members of the care team to ease that transition from a paper-based workflow, a workflow that is largely dependent on interpersonal verbal communication, to one that is now founded on the electronic health record as the principal work engine, workflow engine that they use to deliver care. So, and that's been, at Texas Health Resources, has been a very successful change management initiative. As you mentioned, we're a Davies Award winner. We've been very focused on ensuring that the project has always delivered on the value, the benefits that we intended to achieve with the implementation and the adoption of the electronic health record. And so that's a key lesson, is always be mindful and thoughtful about the benefits. And then when those things aren't being achieved, always looking for opportunities to course correct and make the necessary adjustments, whether it's in the project plan, in aspects of the implementation, or the functionality of the system or the workflow itself that needs to be modified to try to get to those benefits that we set out to achieve at the beginning. I think in terms of lessons learned, one of the things that has been kind of a big aha is that there's always kind of this pendulum. And so now we've gotten our clinicians to be now perhaps overly dependent on the information technology, that they lose sight of the importance of the interpersonal dialogue and making sure that they're following up on, information that's, in the electronic health record and in our information systems, and not just assuming that everybody knows what's going on with the patient just because it's available on a flow sheet or presented in some sort of dashboard. So I think that's been the big lesson as well, is that we have to be careful not to be overly reliant on the technology and maintain the professional skills that we developed in med school and nursing school before there were electronic health records. And I think that's particularly problematic for some of our newer clinicians that are, have never had any training at all or any experience providing patient care outside of the context of doing it with an electronic health record.
Would you think that that's probably one of the bigger disconnects that healthcare has in its relationship with technology?
Yes. I think it's not just healthcare. I think, increasingly our society is becoming over-dependent on information technology, and it's becoming, a preoccupation. And I think that the danger is that we lose the human touch, which is why many of us went into healthcare in the first place, right? It's to be able to have that interpersonal relationship with our patients, with other care team members. And so I think that is the risk of technology if we're not careful.
It's taken a long time to, from a patient perspective, we always have heard in the past about physicians need to improve their ability to communicate with us. Right? And not speak in medical terms. And I think there was a lot of progress being made in that aspect, and now we're maybe at risk of reversing a lot of progress that was made.
Yes, we've introduced, I think, another obstacle to, just good bedside manner. And I think those are the basic lessons of, being a clinician that we can't lose sight of as we continue to introduce technology.
Well, HIMSS-17 is coming up, believe it or not, and as we prepare for that, I'm curious, you've been attending for several years. What was your first conference like, and what was your experience like, and how has it changed over the years?
Sure. So it was probably about 15 years ago that I attended my first HIMSS, and I was still relatively new to the health IT industry at the time. I, as I recall, was still a practicing physician at the time, and had never attended, an IT conference. So, as you can imagine, very overwhelming, the size, scope, the number of attendees, the information overload. And for some, I suspect that continues to be the experience of annual HIMSS conference. But my experience has evolved over the years. I at the time, I was very much a newbie in health IT, so I was trying to absorb as much information as I could, both, in the sessions, the informal networking, and in the exhibit hall. And as I've matured as an attendee of HIMSS conference, I've become much more targeted, more focused in, what I choose to focus on and gain from attending the conference. And that's made it a much more manageable experience. And that would be my advice to anybody attending HIMSS conference, is not to try to achieve everything or learn everything, because it's not really possible with so many things that are happening concurrently and because of the size and scope. It's, you have to focus on what it is that you hope to get and want to get out of attending the conference. And my focus area has changed over the years. There are times when we were still early in the EHR incentive program, Meaningful Use, that for me, I was very focused on learning about that aspect of the policy development process, and so I found that very educational. It's a great opportunity to get access to folks from CMS and ONC, both at the session and the exhibit hall. So that's for those that are interested in learning about MACRA. I'm sure HIMSS-17 will be another great opportunity for doing that. And not just, you know, in the form of didactic sessions, but the Q&A and the interaction with both the folks representing the federal space, but with other providers that are trying to manage and learn what MACRA and MIPS and the programs are going in the future. Obviously, the exhibit hall is always a very fruitful opportunity to learn what all the different vendors are working on, not just the big vendors like the Epics and Cerners, but some of the smaller vendors that you might not otherwise hear about. It's a great opportunity to get some interaction and get some insights into that particular aspect of the IT industry or IT sector that they're involved with. So that's my advice, is be very targeted, be very focused, be organized going into conference so that you stick to your plan and don't get too distracted. But always, always be looking for opportunities to learn. And I think the networking aspect of HIMSS is extremely valuable as well.
And if someone was still undecided about whether or not they wanted to go, what would you advise?
Well, I would always encourage them to do it and find out what reasons they might be holding them back. You know, is it the cost? Is it, what their previous experiences are? But in general, I do think that attending HIMSS annual conference is always worth the expense as well as the time invested in attending. So I would certainly encourage it, and happy to speak to people that might be on the fence and may need more specific convincing. I do know that this next year's conference will have some really great keynote speakers, and so that those are always excellent to hear from. And this is with the elections coming up tomorrow. we know that again there will be significant change in the national landscape that will likely impact healthcare. And so I think the annual conference will be a good opportunity for those trying to understand and make sense of what the outcome of tomorrow's elections will be and how that will apply to themselves, whether they're healthcare providers or IT vendors or consultants.
Good advice. Thank you very much for that. And
you're welcome.
By the time this podcast is posted, we will know what's going on. And
I look forward to it as well.
Absolutely. So I have one more question for you, if you have a couple of minutes. We focus here on this podcast on humans and technology and that relationship. So we ask all of our guests, what's your favorite technological invention, and what do you think its impact has been on our culture?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because, technology is so so broadly defined. So I'll answer that by not referencing an electronic kind of technology, but rather an analog one, and those are eyeglasses or spectacles. So I wear glasses. I wouldn't be able to read without them. Obviously, the glasses have been around for a long time as a form of technology. And what I like about them is that today we take them for granted. They're something that we wear, we use to just carry out our normal daily lives. And for people like myself, if we didn't have glasses, we wouldn't be able to function because we wouldn't be able to see very well or perhaps even at all. And I think it reflects what I'd like to see health IT and maybe information technology, how I'd like for society to view that kind of technology at some point in the future, where it's something that's indispensable but yet not really obtrusive, that it's something that we that overcomes the limitations that we have as human beings, but does it in a way that doesn't detract in any way from our humanity.
All right. Well, I can guarantee you that's the first time we've ever heard that answer, and it's a really interesting one, proving that human augmentation is not a 21st century phenomenon. Well, thank you so much, Ferdinand Velasco, MD, Chief Health Information Officer at the Davies Award-winning Texas Health Resources. Dr. Velasco, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome, Rod.
Hi, I'm Amanda Berkey. I bring value to HIMSS members through the creation of social media campaigns on topics important to them. You're listening to Steps to Value.
So, how does your organization effectively deal with change? Send us your thoughts as a voice memo or email, and we'll play it or read it on the air at the end of our next episode. You can send your comments to value@hims.org. We'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Ferdinand Velasco, for sharing his perspective on the intended and unintended consequences of technological change in the healthcare sector. For more information on everything discussed by today's guests, please visit this episode's landing page at hims.org/steps-to-value. Steps to Value is a HIMS North America production. The series is co-produced by Adam Baser. Rhonda Frazier is our story editor and guest relations manager. And I'm Rod Pihowski. See you next time on Steps to Value.